And I think obviously we would have to look at the committees so that we can actually run through the present members of the committee. So can I just greet everyone, good morning, and welcome everybody. And I will actually start with the members of the committees, Andre.
Chairperson, I will call out the names of the members of the NA committee and the secretary for the NCOP will do so likewise on the other side. So if I might call Ms. Hermans to indicate if she's present, Chair.
Hermans.
Present, Chair.
Thank you.
Ms. Yaku.
Honourable Yaku.
Present, Chair.
Welcome.
Mr. Mulder.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm present, Chair.
Thank you, three.
Mr. Muyani, Chair.
Muyani.
Present.
Thank
He's present, Chair. Mr. Thring.
Honourable Thring.
Present, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Sebukulu, Chair.
Come again.
Sebukulu.
Or Tebekulu, or Tebekulu. Honourable Tebekulu. We greeted earlier.
He was here earlier, Chair. Ms. Mantashe, Chair.
Honourable Mantashe.
Present.
Thank you.
Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Honourable Cuthbert.
Present, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, I know Ms. Mutawung, I saw, or...
Mutawung. Honourable Mutawung.
She may still have challenges linking on, Chair, but I'll alert you to that. Those are the members for the NA that is present at this stage, Chair.
Okay.
I'll ask my counterpart in the NCOP to take her through her members, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for welcome the NCOP colleagues. Can we ask the Secretariat?
Thanks, Andre. Good morning to everyone. My name is Nozipho Dinizulu. From the Select Committee, we have Mr. Moiman.
Moiman, Honourable Moiman.
We have Ms. Boshoff.
Ms. Boshoff. I did see both my colleagues.
Ms. Matebula.
Come again.
Ms. Matebula.
Matebula.
Mr. Protestant.
Good morning, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
We also received an apology from Mr. Long, from Mr. Khai, and Mr. Dako.
It's Mr. Long, Khai,
and Mr. Dako. Yes.
We do actually have those three apologies.
Chair?
Yes, Andre.
Mr. McPherson also is present now, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Honourable McPherson?
That will be all, Chair.
Okay. Okay. So I think taking from the Secretariat, it does actually confirm that we can be able to proceed. I'm not sure if ever we have any apologies, because I think from the NA, we actually do have a quorum from what I see. The apologies from NCOP colleagues, I think we've got those three apologies.
The apologies. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So let me take Secretariat. Are there any other issues around the constitution of the meeting?
No, everything we correct, Chair. We can proceed with the meeting, Chair, in terms of the rules.
Yes. Can I ask that we then put up the agenda? So I think in the main part of the agenda will be the two presentations. We will be taking one presentation at a time. We would actually then be able to also take questions for clarity and or comments in an answer session. So I think let me present then before the joint committee the agenda as proposed, so that I can just get members to indicate if ever there should be adjustment or any issue that we have to look at. Honourable members, the agenda Helmans.
Chair, I wish to propose the adoption of the agenda as presented.
There's a mover for the adoption. Let me check if there's a seconder. Honourable members, the agenda before you. There's a mover. Herman's the seconder.
Ms. Mantashe, Chair.
Chairperson.
There's a hand of Honourable Mantashe.
Chair.
Yes.
How are you, Chair?
Slow, but
Ms. Mantashe, it's Mike, Chair.
Mantashe, Mike.
I arrived to second the proposal to adopt the agenda.
Okay. There was a member that was actually calling out. Was it Mbuyane?
Yeah, Chair, I wanted to second, but it's fine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, so any objections? If none, can we actually then ask that we proceed, because of the apology that I've actually had, my co-chairperson indicated that he wasn't well. He called me yesterday. He will be unable to join us today. Can I then actually request that we proceed to the next part of the presentation as raised in the agenda we agreed right now? We do actually have a commissioner that will actually be leading, a Commissioner Bonakele. I think that's the first one of the Competition Commission. Honorable Commissioner Bonakele will be the one that will actually take us through the presentation. Can we then actually project the presentation and invite Honorable Commissioner and the team? Obviously, there will be other colleagues. He will actually indicate those who are connected with us. Honorable Commissioner, can we invite you to talk to us through your presentation? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. We're just trying to open the presentation quickly.
Okay.
I'm hoping that you can see the presentation,
yes,
Chair.
I can see it. I can see it, Commissioner. I hope members and are able to see same. Honourable members,
Chair, I can't see the presentation.
You can see that, Mantashe?
It's not on my screen.
Are you cutting a bit? Is it Honourable Mantashe?
Yes,
Chair, we will attend to that, Chair,
okay.
From behind the scenes, Chair.
Secretariat and the technician will actually look at that. Can we then agree that the commissioner proceed with the presentation? For those that might have a problem, we have a chat today on the gadgets, do we? Because remember, we're trying to actually do the chat as well to actually have intervention on some of the issues. Commissioner Bonakele, I'm sure you can start or take us through your presentation. Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Thembinkosi Bonakele, the Commissioner of the Competition Commission. I am heading the delegation of the Competition Commission that's here today, and we are joined by Mr. Hardin Rachisutu, who is the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Bukosibake Machenge, who is the Chief Legal Counsel, Mr. James Hodge, who is the Chief Economist, Ms. Kanyisa Kobo, who is the Divisional Manager for Advocacy, and lastly, Ms. Mapato Ramakopa, who is the Divisional Manager in the Office of the Commissioner. You will see, Chair, that We have quite a big delegation. We thought that we should bring all the people who have been involved in the cases that you would like us to discuss today, but I will be doing the presentation myself, and my colleagues will help with questions in the end, should it be necessary.
Thank you.
This is the outline of the presentation as guided by the officials in the secretariat. We will do a brief introduction and then COVID-19 economic impact. Then that will be followed by just a slide on the operations of the Commission during COVID-19. Slide 4 will deal with regulations and block exemptions that were granted during this period. And then I will deal with investigations, number 5, number 6. I'll just brief you on the work that we are doing in monitoring prices during this time. And then I'll brief you on the other significant work that we are doing, and that will be followed by a conclusion. I have quite a limited time, but the slides are there with you. So sometimes I'm going to run quite fast on some of the slides that provide just a background. Just as an introduction, as you all know, but it's important to always remind ourselves that the Competition Commission is empowered by the Competition Act to investigate, control, and evaluate restrictive business practices. Those are the transgressions in terms of the Competition Act. The purpose of the Act of the Commission is to promote and maintain competition in South Africa in order to achieve efficiency in the economy as well as promote certain public interests. These things are things like employment, participation of SMMEs in the economy, and so on. The Act itself prohibits various acts of excessive pricing, price fixing, allocation of markets, and things like bid rigging or tender collusion. And anyone who is found to have contravened the Act can face a penalty of up to 10%, or if they are a repeat offender, a penalty of up to 25%. COVID-19, I think it's very well known that it is a huge public health challenge, which is why we have to hold this hearing in this platform. But it also presents significant challenges to the economy. And one of those is the anticipated low economic growth trajectory for a period of time. In fact, the economy is pretty much going to shrink for a particular period, and we are really facing a real possibility of socio-economic challenges emanating from that, including unemployment and poverty. But it also is likely to increase have a huge impact on the market. We are anticipating that there will be an increase in concentration as firms exit, and so there's likely to be a lot of merger activity involving distressed firms. I should indicate that we have already started seeing some of this. We're not exactly sure that they are caused by the pandemic per se, but clearly one can see that there is going to be a lot of consolidation. So there is a need to refocus competition regulation to ensure that we lower barriers to entry and promote access to markets, especially by SMMEs as well as historically disadvantaged firms. Also to protect consumers against any abuses during time like this, as we know that there are people who may want to take advantage of the current situation. we also have to help firms. We have to help firms survive this pandemic. And the tool we have to do that is to grant exemptions to distressed industries and firms from certain provisions of the Competition Act. In a sense, allow them to do things that otherwise would have been regarded as transgressions, just to make sure that we pull through together as a nation. On operations of the Commission, we have been operating pretty much remotely since the lockdown. We have had to improve our systems to ensure that we are able to have business continuity, although to do so remotely. But also we've had to refocus our work. For example, we've had to prioritize providing input into regulations that are done by the department that have an impact on competition. So things like excessive pricing regulations, we had to make an input. Block exemptions are granted by the minister after consultation with the commissioner. But we really are the experts in the area, so we've had to really help the ministry. And so that was also quite a lot of work. We also have had to do investigations on an expedited basis. We've received a number of complaints related to COVID-19. As I've indicated, we've also had to deal with some measures in key sectors of the economy. We also have had to do a lot of advocacy to business as well as government on just how to deal with some of the competition impact of this. We've had to speak with suppliers, retailers, and so on. The regulations themselves were promulgated by the minister after the declaration of COVID-19 as a disaster, a national disaster, and they deal with price gouging, or what we call in the Competition Act, excessive pricing. And these regulations prohibit dominant suppliers from charging excessive prices for certain specified goods and services. And these are mainly basic food products, consumer items, as well as medical and hygiene items that are needed for COVID-19. And there is a list of those. And essentially, the regulations say that if you increase prices without any concomitant increase in input costs, in other words, you can't justify those increases with similar increases in input costs, and that will be a factor that is taken into account by the competition authorities in assessing such conduct. The regulations for block exemptions were also published. You know, the Act, as amended last year, allowed the minister to promulgate these block exemptions. And I should say to the committee that the amendments to the Competition Act have come really handy during this time, not just for consumers. Of course, we care a lot for consumers, but for business as well, because the minister was able to swiftly grant certain sectors of the economy block exemptions. This is something that we didn't have before the exemptions were promulgated. It was only the commission that could do block exemptions, and on a fairly narrow basis. So I think that South Africa, in fact, is a pioneer in this. We've had a discussion in the OECD, and many countries are saying they have no mechanism in their own laws to deal with this. And it's just amazing that just a year before, we were able to promulgate a law that enabled the minister to do all of this work. The rules of the tribunal were also changed in order to be able to respond better because the rules of the tribunal can, the hearing can take a much longer period of time in terms of the normal rules. So parties, for example, will have about 15-20 days before they respond to our papers, and that period has been significantly truncated now, and so we are able to have expedited hearings as well as resolution of matters arising from this. The regulations, just to give you a foretaste, they are coming, the exemptions, they are coming all the time, so this is not an exhaustive list, but perhaps these are important ones, just to illustrate really how important these are. The first one is in the healthcare sector. This relates to their coordination in the supply of healthcare services and products, because obviously in a period like this, you don't want to run out of supply, so they can coordinate, talk about their inventories, and so on. The banking sector also came in quite early and said that they are thinking of providing payment holidays and debt relief to customers, and they need to coordinate all of this work. We spoke to their association as well as Treasury, which is their regulator, and we all crafted something that we thought was necessary. The retail property industry is the same thing. A lot of tenants are not able to pay rent, and we are seeing we granted them an exemption there. So those are just examples, Chair. I will not talk through all of them, otherwise I may run out of my time. I want to come to investigations, which is really the main thing for today. We've received a number of complaints since the declaration of the national disaster. In fact, just a few days before, if you recall, there was a lot of panic buying, and some of the suppliers and retailers increased prices. And from then on, we've seen a flood of complaints. At the time of us doing these presentations, we're standing at 1,354. These are not all formal complaints in the sense of a person filling up forms and submitting them. Sometimes these are just tip-offs. Some of them are just photographs that are sent to us, and sometimes through social media, we picked them up. The complaints relate to allegations mainly that a lot of the retailers, traders and suppliers are charging excessive pricing for mainly goods such as masks and sanitizers and some basic food items. So we've investigated all of these in terms of the excessive pricing provisions that are contained in Section 8 of the Act, and I've reminded honorable members what that Section 8 and it's a dominant firm. So a firm has to be dominant and it must have a turnover of 5 million, and such a firm is not allowed to charge excessive prices. Excessive pricing, I know that is sometimes a very complex concept. I've included a definition there. It refers to a price for goods or services which bears no reasonable relation to the economic value of that good or service, or is higher than the value of that good or service. So that's the law that we are working with specifically. Obviously, not all of these 1,300 complaints or so are raising relevant competition issues for us to pursue. But what they do is that they keep our screening unit quite busy, because from there we have to sift cases that warrant to be taken forward. We have observed three trends from what we received. So the first is people who genuinely were responding to input costs or supply disruptions that led to higher costs. So for an example, we know that there are areas where we import goods, and where we're facing price increases from imports, there's nothing really that people can do about that. So we've seen some costs increases emanating from that, and generally we would do nothing about that. But we've also seen as a second trend pricing, where firms have increased prices despite there being no significant increase in input costs. And these are the ones that are defined in those regulations as a price gouging. Sometimes there would be increase in input costs, but the increase in prices would be far more than the input costs. So we've had to make that kind of analysis when we are dealing with cases. And the third trend has been opportunistic buyers. So these are sort of traders. These are people who previously didn't trade in these products. So a person sees an opportunity to sell masks, to sell sanitizers, things like that. And they just have huge markups. We've seen this in a lot of traders, for an example, in pharmacies and even hardware stores that we're seeing the opportunity to do this. And some are listing these on the internet and so on. Very difficult to deal with, but nevertheless making communities very unhappy. I've also given you a background on those complaints by province. I will not take you through all of that, but you will see that 43% is coming from Gauteng. Someone moved my slides, sorry, I'm trying to take control of my slide. Someone took control of my slide. I'm back, sorry, Chair. And you see provinces also like Eastern Cape featuring quite high and KZN. But I will not, I'll leave it there. That pie chart does a graphic representation of the complaints and where they come from. We've also done a slide that just shows you the type of products. Again, I will not spend too much time here. It's fair to say that basic food products,
Chair, we can't see the presentation.
Oh, okay. Can you, Commissioner or technician as well, if you can just assist.
Thank you, Chair. I have it here, but still being under sharing, so maybe I can stop sharing and share it again.
Okay.
IT people, you can tell me if that's right. Can I stop it and start it again?
If that will assist to project better, I'm sure we can do that. But I'm sure you have had a long discussion with the technician. We won't be clear of the process. So
I'm going to quickly try and share it again, Chair. I'm hoping it should work.
Okay.
It is opening.
Okay. You were at, okay, I can see it up, but in an opening page, because you were
mid-session. Chair, we can't see the presentation. I don't know what, if it's our devices or if it's everyone.
Yeah.
And it asks you to take control of the slides. I don't know. It's the first time I see this.
Okay.
Sorry. Good morning.
Okay.
I can see. I think there are some that can see and some that can't.
Okay.
We will, Chair, we will ask IT to look into the matter. Members do have copies was emailed to them. So I don't know how we're going to proceed because it seems that some members do have and can see and some members can't.
Let's confirm before you do actually have a the email. We just maybe ask members to pick up on the presentation. Commissioner, you'll need just maybe be specific on what page you're in of the presentation, because I see you're on page 9. of the 23-slide presentation. And maybe we can ask members to have a look at that. I'm not sure what page you're in. You'll be moving to, if you can speak to that commissioner. And honorable members, if ever you can be able to...
I'm going to start on 14, Chair, slide 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I hope honorable members are all able to project on page 14.
Yes,
yeah. Okay. All right.
Sometimes it's just the network, Chair. I was just going to suggest, Chair, and I know this is the domain of IT people, sometimes it's the network, so it's better to switch off the video when you are not speaking sometimes.
Yes,
Chair.
Okay.
If everybody can switch off the video, it will help.
Or does it? Then it actually has ceased. Okay.
My video is not on and I am sitting.
Chair.
Yeah,
okay. Can we ask IT to sort this out? I don't have any network problems. I'm in the city of Cape Town and I'm close to towers and things. So my network is 100%, but I can't see the presentation. And it's the first time this has happened.
Yes, yes. Any IT person can come in and maybe address the issue?
Okay.
Sharon? Chair, if I may, this is the problem that I've been having continually. So that is the reason why I always have a backup. So I will either have my another device where I'm able to open the presentation and follow so I can hear the sound. And I'm also having the same problem of not being able to see the presentation. It comes and it goes. So I'm actually following on my other device. So that kind of helps. But I've been having this problem ever since we started.
No, I think, Honorable Tring, your suggestion might be very helpful. Can I just ask maybe just take 2 minutes just to make sure that you open up your presentation on your other gadgets, Honorable Members, and then you can actually ask the Commissioner to be able to be focused on the page. We are page 14, and then we would actually then ask that, honorable members, on your alternate gadget, if you can open up your presentation, and then the commissioner will be able to actually just move page by page. Apology for the inconvenience. So let me just check if ever all members are able to get the alternate and be on page 14. If we can, and then we can actually hand over to the commissioner to then move from page 14 in the presentation.
Chairperson,
you
yes,
do have a gadget.
Yeah, Chairperson, Mr. Mbuyane speaking.
Mbuyane?
Yes, I propose that we continue with the presentation, Chairperson. We do have copies, so we cannot wait for copies.
Okay. No, I just wanted to make sure that everyone is connected or is able to access the alternate gadget as well.
Yes, Chair.
Chair, I'm fine. You covered.
Mine is fine.
Okay, thanks.
I see the presentation.
Okay. All right. Can I check the other members so that at least we don't proceed without being exposed? Can we proceed in that way, honorable members?
You can proceed, Chair, but I've not yet found the other thing. I'm still studying it. But continue anyway.
Okay. You don't have the other presentation on your other gadget?
Still looking around. I only find the National Consumer Commission one. I can't see the Competition Commission presentation on my gadget.
Okay. Andre,
I will
continue.
It was sent at some 8 this morning, Chair, but I'll resend it to members now.
Okay. All right. So we'll do a slight pause then, and then ask that we proceed. Can we take just 5 minutes? Will that be okay?
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chair.
Yeah. Just 5 minutes, honorable members, so that at least we have everyone connected. We wouldn't like to actually just run through without you actually following up. 5 minutes, just connection. Secretariat and technician, if ever you can. Honourable members, if ever there's anyone who need any assistance, please call the secretariat so that they can be able to receive. Yes, Andre?
ICT has indicated they are attending to the issue. I'll just email the presentation to members again. So members should just check their emails as well.
Okay. We're just taking 5 minutes. Apology for that.
Chairperson, we see it now. Andre, we can see it now.
Chair, the members are indicating they can see the presentation now on the screen, Chair. Chairperson?
I think he's taken a body break.
Yeah. Okay. I still can't see, but I found the document that Andre just sent to me. Andre?
Yes, Ms. I can hear you, Ms. Ventash. You at least have the document with you.
Okay.
Slide 40.
I've got now with the one that you just said.
Yeah.
I can't see the one on the screen, but I don't mind.
If I exit
the
I'm sure we can be able to start, honorable members.
Yes, Chair, most members have...
Break. Yes, Andre.
Members have received the email, and some members do have the... Can see it on screen now as well, Chair.
Okay. Sorry for the inconvenience. Commissioner, can I ask you to then proceed? We were at page 14 of your presentation. Thank you.
That is correct, Chair. Thank you very much. I gave you a sense, if you recall, of the number of cases, what products those cases involved, and from where those cases came from. I now want to take you through what we have done with those cases. So the first thing we did was to proactively take steps to reach out to business to understand their business models and encourage them to have adequate supplies, because if you recall, there was panic buying and there were problems of possible shortages in certain stores, and this was also leading to price increases. So we really wanted to understand what's exactly happening on the ground without prejudging the issue. Because at that time, consumers were complaining not just about prices, but also sometimes about shortages. And you will recall that we were very concerned at the time that by the time the national disaster was declared, it was mid-month, and we were worried that a lot of people who get pensions or get paid by month end would find prices significantly high, or there would be shortage of stock. So we were really trying to dissuade people from profiteering from the crisis and encouraging them to keep adequate stocks, and when necessary to restrict the number of items that each person could buy. And we were also encouraging the public to report these cases to us. So if you like, these were sort of advocacy programs. We went into GCIS press conferences together with ministers to explain to consumers what we were doing. We reached out together with the National Consumer Commission. They established a toll-free line, which we jointly used to pick up some cases. The second thing we did was enforcement. This is where we started investigations and prioritized them. We worked, as I have indicated, closely with the National Consumer Commission. We had a joint operations team that would streamline investigations and avoid duplications. The third element of our approach was settlements. You know, when you have like over 1,000 cases, it's not possible that your system can process all of these cases. So you need to find mechanisms of fast-tracking them. And one of those has been settlements. Settlements are also very helpful because many, many of the suppliers here who have been involved in wrongdoing are very, very small, actually. Small one-person run pharmacy there and so on. We have many of those types of cases. So you need to be punishing them, but you also need to be pragmatic. The outcomes of the investigations, I will not take you through all of them, Chair, just to highlight perhaps the big ones. We've had an excessive pricing case against a firm called Babelehi of Tshwane. This firm increased prices for facial masks, so we saw markups in excess of 500%, which was quite unusual, because we have an idea of what these types of markups should be. That case was heard at the tribunal, and we are awaiting judgment. So I will not talk too much about it. The second case was against Dis-Chem. Also very, very similar to the first case, increased the prices for face masks in excess of between 43% and 260%. We've also had price increases of filtering face masks by something just under 1,000 by Henox and Securo. These are related firms. These two, so the DISCAM case has also been heard at the tribunal quite swiftly. We are awaiting judgment there. These two cases have now been settled, and the two firms have admitted guilt and agreed to pay a penalty. And this is quite recent, is of last week. We have, as I have indicated, encouraged settlements, and we have achieved a number of settlements and consent orders so far. Sorry about that. In the undertakings that we require from firms, as I've indicated, we have an idea of what fair margins should be. A lot of them we have asked that they reduce their margins to keep them at 20% for a period of time, that they must pay a penalty or donate an amount that bears some relationship to the excess profits that they earn to charity organizations, old age homes, as well as the solidarity fund. This is when we feel that they should have been paying this back to their customers, but it is very hard to identify those customers because, you know, people will come buy masks and maybe they are overcharged by 5 rands. So consumers are scattered all over, the amounts might be too small, but we say that they must not keep that excess profit. They must rather donate it to the Solidarity Fund or to other charities. And we make sure that the penalty also exceeds the profits that were earned. So today, to date, a penalty, firms of up to 35 are in various settlement stages of discussions with us. So this is the list of settlement orders. Chair, I will not take you through this, but also for interest, I thought I should include them in the slide so that if there are any questions, we can discuss them. But they generally relate to the same type of products. They generally also include very similar terms: penalty, donation to the Solidarity Fund or charity, and lowering the margin. In terms of the amounts involved, I've included there, my system is blocking me, but we've had administrative penalties of by now 74, as well as donations to the Solidarity Fund of 5.3 million. There are other smaller donations that are also reflected there. Food price has been a major concern, as I've indicated. The number one concern of consumers is food. So we are monitoring the price of food to understand the retail level inflation as well as enforcement action. So when we our overall observation, and STATSA is very helpful because they are also issuing weekly data on this now. The rand has depreciated quite a lot, and I think everybody knows that. So on those items that we import, there have been some increases, and we're expecting even more increases, especially if the rand continues to decline. So crops such as wheat, we've seen a 25% increase. Very, very important to mention this upfront, honorable members, because once they start, the price of bread starts rising, everybody is going to be quite upset and coming to the authorities. But if you look at that 25%, there's very little that we could do about this. And in fact, some of the suppliers of wheat and of flour and bread have delayed putting up those prices. And I can tell you that we've spoken to all the major suppliers. But we are worried that once those are start coming in rice. For an example, we know that Vietnam has stopped exports for rice, and that has a huge impact on the international price for rice. So we've seen a price rise of 30%. So we kind of expect that, but we also are expecting that the domestic maize price should be coming down round about May after this year's harvest, because we've had a bumper crop. So if you like, the products that we consume locally, we should see no significant change, that is food products. And in some areas, we should even see price drops. But the products that we import, I think it's important for us to be honest with the people that we are likely to see price increases there, and we have no control over that. What we worry about are people who even add to those price increases by unreasonable markup increases. Fresh produce is also another concern. We've received a number of complaints on things like onions, potatoes, ginger, tomatoes, and so on, from all sorts of suppliers, the Spar Group, some of the retailers, and so on. So we've seen some spikes there in pricing. It is correct what all consumers have observed. But we've also seen that since the drop in the demand from restaurants, the market has been somewhat constrained, and we're starting to see prices steadily falling, and the supply eventually does outstrip demand. You should see those prices coming down. So if you like, we've had a spike because of the sudden turn of events with the lockdown and the national disaster. But I can assure you that from where we see technically, we have no reason to have sleepless nights. We think that this is under control. In fact, the Reserve Bank is also, if you look at the inflation numbers, it's not like we're having huge inflation. In fact, they are expecting a drop in the inflation rate. But we are watching, and we know that there are opportunistic people here and there who are increasing prices unreasonably so. Now, I want to move on from these COVID-19 related cases to just brief you very briefly on the some of the cases that we have been doing, because we've been working beyond just COVID-19. We've seen in the area of mergers, firms in distress include an acquisition of Celsi. You know, Celsi has been in trouble for a while now. We have a merger before us that we are finalizing. That should see Celsi being rescued, surviving, and those jobs being saved. We also have a merger that is very, very difficult of Sadevest. Sadevest is also struggling to survive. This is providing silos, grain, and things like that. It's a difficult measure because the purchaser of this company is already dominant in some areas, and it might be a difficult measure for us to approve. We also have a coal measure, South 32 acquisition by Seriti. We are also quite advanced with the analysis of that measure. We've had settlements with mobile network operators on the prices of data. Vodacom and MTN have agreed to reduce prices by between 30% and 50% actually. And this has been confirmed. Vodacom's agreement has been confirmed as an order of the tribunal. We are waiting for a date for MTN, but they've already started also reducing these prices. I want to emphasize that when we did this, we didn't have in mind COVID-19. We know that there's been increased demand, and these companies should be really having a very good volumes. So we do expect that prices should go further down, even from these levels that have now been ordered as a result of our market inquiry. So we are monitoring this market very closely. But what we are happy about also, was we've introduced the idea of lifeline data and zero rating of data with this market inquiry and settlement with these companies. And we now see that this is really helpful with education, online platforms, and things like that being an absolute necessity. So again, I think our interventions were quite timely as this economy and others are transitioning more to operate digitally. We have just yesterday issued guidelines on buyer power. So the minister issued regulations on buyer power, which restricts the exercise of abuse of power by dominant firms. We have now clarified how it will be implemented. It presents an opportunity, a huge opportunity for SMMEs as well as historically disadvantaged firms to participate in the economy. It introduces the concept of fairness in contracting between dominant buyers as well as sellers. We've also settled with retail stores. Some of you might have picked this up, that we've finally, after a long struggle of exclusivity in shopping malls by the major retailers, including ShopRite, Checkers, Pick and Pay, and so on, we have finally agreed with ShopRite, Checkers that they will immediately cease exclusivity against other supermarkets, and they will. This will allow the much-needed competition in the retail space, in that the independent retailers and other competitors can enter into shopping malls where these exist. We still face some resistance from at least one of the supermarket chains, but I think that we can declare victory over this with ShopRite, Checkers having agreed and being the largest. By the way, Pick and Pay has also agreed, and we are just awaiting to finalize the signing of those agreements and presenting the agreement before the tribunal. So ShopRite, Checkers, Pick and Pay have agreed to remove the long-term exclusive lease agreement as a result of our three-year market inquiry into this. This should allow independent players to come into supermarkets and participate in the market. In conclusion, Chair, we will continue, obviously in collaboration with our colleagues from the National Consumer Commission, to prioritize the COVID-19 cases and refer where we find abuses to the Competition Tribunal. We are not just punishing firms, I emphasize. We are talking to firms. So we are saying where they face increases, such as input costs that they face, they must still tell us about these so that at least we can manage that proactively. And if we must investigate their own suppliers, we can be able to do so. So we're talking to them whilst prosecuting those we think are abusive all at the same time. We will be prioritizing major regulation in distressed firms as they come to us. We will do our best to protect existing jobs as we do that, because that's part of our mandate when we regulate measures. We also are looking at block exemptions in the sectors of the economy. We are encouraging especially the small players to take advantage of this possibility. We will work closely with government and business to provide advice and advocacy regarding specific proposed interventions for the economic recovery, because it is going to be important with the economic recovery that competition policy is at the center of that. If we have helped companies to consolidate either through major regulation or we've given them block exemptions, it means that there will be restricted competition during the recovery. And there's a real possibility that consumers will be exploited and will face higher prices. For an example, already in the airlines, we are hearing of the talk of consolidation, and an airline expert has predicted a price increase of about 50% when the airlines ultimately resume. So we have to make sure that we are constantly vigilant. It is going to be a very difficult recovery, but it must be a fair recovery. So thank you very much, Chair. That's the end of our presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I would actually ask the Secretary to the signage of who really would like to speak. I would actually then revert back in the same process we agreed upon, just to check who are the members who actually want to comment. But obviously, we would actually then ask that you call them out, and they will then actually make those comments.
Chair,
and
I have
get the commissioner to come back. Andre?
But can we just ask the commissioner to stop sharing the document, please, Chair? That's important.
Oh, okay. All right. Commissioner, I'm sure you accessing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Chair, I've noticed Mr. Cuthbert is the first a member to ask the questions. I've noted the other members as well, Chair.
Okay. Let's start, Honourable Cuthbert.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I'd just like to ask the Commissioner what their projection is for inflation in the year 2020. Recently, the Reserve Bank has said that we are looking at an inflation rate of roughly 3.6%, and I wanted to know if the Commission's projections were in line with that particular statement by the Reserve Bank, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, follow Ms. Yaku.
Honourable Yaku.
Thank you, Chair. I won't put my video just in case it's going to interfere with the network. I think the Competition Commission has its work cut out for it, and I commend it for the work it's done so far. I also commend it for the work it's doing to the phase-out ShopRite, because these big businesses are really starting to interfere with the ownership of the economy where people reside. So I'm happy that they're taking that into cognizance. Also, I would like for them to beef up on their social media presence. I think that's where most complaints are had. And also, there's other industries that are opening up as time goes by, such as your accessories to cell phones. I've noticed that there's quite an overpricing because you can't easily get those appliances, as easily as you'd have on a normal day. So most shops are actually hiking up their prices, and for me, it's very. I don't understand it, because this should be the time where the country is coming together to say giving back to each other. But it seems like capital and the money is the only thing that talks at the moment. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
Chairperson,
Honourable Member,
Ms. Mwatse.
Honourable Mwatse.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask questions. How is the value of the penalties imposed for price gauge compared to the revenue generated on the sale of the product at high prices? Mopani Pharmacy in Mbombela for hand sanitizer and dust mask. The second one is, what lessons has been learned by the NCC during the lockdown, and what measures the NCC implements going forward against the price hikes? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. I will just check, Commissioner, you did pick up on that.
Chairperson, there's more questions, Chair? Ms. Norm, okay. More members. Ms. Yeah. Matevula.
Matevula.
Chair, may I read the question that she posed on the chat, Chair?
Okay, please.
Please investigate the price of maize meal in rural municipalities such as Vuwahi and Malamulele in Vembe and Giani in Mopani. In Mpopo, the price are too high.
Okay.
Then followed by Mrs. Hermans.
Hermans.
Good morning, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity. And I want to commend the Commission for the good work that they have done. And I think if this period of COVID-19 has taught us anything, it is that we can actually speed up the delivery of our services and achieve the same result. So I want them to continue with the fast turnaround that we've seen during this period. But there also seems to be some inconsistencies in the penalties imposed by the NCC. A case in point is the case of Main Hardware, where customers were refunded. But in other cases, customers are not refunded. So that's a sort of inconsistency in the penalties that you impose. And maybe we must just ask you to explain those and underline the reasons for that inconsistency. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, Mr. Thring.
Honorable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the ACDP appreciates the pressure that was placed on the cell phone operators and others in the digital space to reduce the cost of data. And we also call on the CCSA to place further pressure on these companies to ensure that the cost of data becomes affordable to the majority of South Africans. Chair, just a question. We also note that indicated in the slide that the settlement and consent orders, the following were applied, is corrective action, penalties, and that corrective action, the presenter indicated that the price margins resulted in a reduction of up to 20%. Now, I'm not sure because I heard him say it was kept at 20%. The price margins were kept. So was it a reduction of up to 20% on the price margins, or was it kept or the price margins kept at 20%? Because if it was a reduction of 20%, then some of these companies would still be laughing all the way to the bank because they've increased their margins by up to almost, you know, in excess of 900%. And a 20% reduction would be, you know, very minimal indeed. The second question, Chair, was that it was indicated in the presentation that you would seek to avoid duplication with regards to investigations into transgressions. But it seems as if both the CCSA as well as the NCR reports on investigations into DISCIM for what appears to be the same transgression. So what system is being used to prevent duplication? Because it appears as if the system that is in place is not working. So if you could just speak to that duplication with regards to investigations into DISCIM. And then finally, Chair, the ACDP just appreciates the cessation exclusivity clauses by the major supermarket chains, particularly in the non-urban areas. And we compliment the Competition Commission for the work done in that particular area. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre.
Mr. McPherson, Chairperson.
McPherson, Honorable McPherson.
Yes, thanks very much. Just a couple of things. Has there been any recommendation or view by yourselves to extend the property exemption beyond the three sectors that were identified? Because, you know, the inability of people to trade is beyond just the three sections or the three sectors that were done. I do worry that that there is a narrative that you know, all companies are profiteering in this time, and you know, there's, you know, comments like, well, the prices are too high, you know, and it creates a narrative that, you know, everyone's trying to rip the ring out of it, and I think that that's a very dangerous narrative, and I think that the commission must walk a very fine line in rebutting those and rebutting those sorts of general comments. And I worry when you say, well, you know, airline prices are going to increase by 50%. Well, of course they're going to increase because, A, they're going to have to practice social distancing, so can't sell as many seats. B, their routes are going to be limited. So, of course, the prices are going to increase. That's a natural result of a market economy in a time like this. So I really do think, Commissioner, statements like that can be misinterpreted and can be misleading to the public that, you know, people are hiking prices because they want to. Dis-Chem have come out publicly and accused you of using them as a scapegoat to try and get a big prosecution. I'd like to know how you would respond to that. And also, I would like to know how many total cases have you investigated for various infringements, and what is the status of those cases? If you can please provide a report to us in writing, I'd be grateful. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Yes, Andre.
Mr. Mbuyane?
Mbuyane. Honorable Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning. Let me first welcome the presentation. Chairperson, just a few clarity-seeking questions here. Maybe I'll start by acknowledging the presentation from the Competition Commission. And also, Chair, try to check, because here in terms of the mandate, they talk of investigation, control, settlement, and what. But I want to check in terms of their real mandate. Are they adhering to their mandate? What are their challenges currently as we're facing COVID-19 that hinders them to execute their program? Then, Chairperson, I'm also interested to check yet, but in terms of the cases that seemingly where complaints were received, is 1,354. And from the 1,354, we're told that only 35 cases that were finalized for settlement. So I just want to check, man, what happened to the other 1,300 and something cases, complaints that were lodged. And I want to check also in terms of the turnaround time. Because now we're talking of turnaround town because we are facing COVID. It's a separate matter than turnaround town on a normal basis. So I just want to check currently what is their turnaround time, because I was told it's 30 days and it cannot be 30 days while we are still in COVID as well in terms of the price gauging. Chairperson, on the multi-pronged approach, there's three. One is advocacy, enforcement, and settlement. I just want to check, man, in terms of the advocacy part, because the advocacy part speaks of awareness, speak of checking the model and the JCI. How far are they? Are they able to reach over the 9 provinces in terms of the awareness? What they are in the current in terms of the data. Chairperson, the collaboration with the NCC, we really want to appreciate the collaboration between the CC and the NCC. But I just want to check, man, because seemingly there will be duplication, because there are cases here, they talk of this scam as a competition commission, and also the National Consumer Commission as well is speaking of this case. I just want to check as to, in terms of the collaboration, are they able to separate their cases or is one a case? Last one, on the question of settlement in terms of contravention, I just want to check, man, they're using the only 10% or what? Was people they doing that knowing that they can be able to give 10% of their income to the Competition Commission. What is it that they're doing extra than the 20%? I mean the 10%. Chairperson, maybe on the last one will be the Vodacom and MTN in terms of their reduced prices. I just want to check as to, are they started in terms of the implementation of the reduced prices from the Vodacom in terms of the lifeline data and the zero rating? Because last time we were told that in terms of the public interest organizations such as education and healthcare center, they were able to produce and provide free data access to students. But currently now we have a student cannot be able to go to school. So where are those data that can be able to assist the student so that they are able to access their schooling as well? Maybe the last one will be the major retail store chairperson. Shoprite has undertaken that to immediately seize the exclusivity. How are they doing that? Who is monitoring this? Are Shoprite around rural villages? Who is monitoring that supermarket also get the fair chance in terms of business on rural areas? Thank you very much, chairperson.
You can't count, Mbuya. You say last one about three times. Okay, Secretary, who's the next
Mr.
one?
Mr. Mulder.
Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Commissioner, the negative impacts of lockdown could inevitably result in a possible merger of companies in distress, leading to possible monopolies in the industry. What will the approach of the Competition Commission be in assessing lockdown forced mergers? And I would also want to know especially where new monopolies are inevitably forced in an effort to prevent job losses. That's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulder.
Ms. Mantashe.
Honorable Mantashe.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a few questions, but I also want to follow in the footsteps of the people that spoke before me in acknowledging the good work that has been done by the Commission. But I want to check, yes, there are some businesses may be hiking up prices because of the import prices of goods. Do they have a window as a Commission look at whether the rise in prices is justifiable based on those imported goods? Because I see a situation where they will put a double the amount of what they should be putting on goods, exploiting consumers. I wonder if the Commissioner can tell us how much of the wheat that is used that is consumed in South Africa, what percentage is imported? And do they have capacity to can mediate and talk on behalf of South Africans the price of bread that he says it will go up? Is there an intervention that they can make? And what is the percentage of the wheat that we are importing? If that is in their agenda, Chair, the chart on complaints per province shows that all major urban centers recorded more complaints, besides the fact that these areas with high economic activity and large footprint of most retailers. What other factors do they think might have led to the low calls recorded in most rural provinces, given that there's also a footprint of those retailers in the rural? On the negotiated settlement between networks, have they monitored if the networks are implementing what they've agreed upon, seeing that everyone now is going to meet on these black chapters? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Mantashe. The next one on...
Ms. Mutahu, may I ask, she asked me to read a question, Chair, because she's just struggling to go in and out from connectivity problems.
You can read it out.
Okay. How does the Commission give feedback to a complainant or on a tip-off? What is the turnaround time for the completion of investigations, Chair? There's more questions, Chair, that I was asked to read from Ms. Matuvula. I'll start with number one. She said, I have reported the case to you, Commission, and it took me 2 weeks to get a response. I had to make an effort to get the response. How long does it take your Commission to respond to complaints, and how long does it take to do investigation? Then the next question, Chair.
Yeah. All right. Next one.
Most people in rural municipalities and townships are the ones who are suffering most with price hikes, and they are struggling with lack of access to internet and lack of access to information on where to report these cases. What methods are you using to make sure that the Commission is known in these rural communities? The following question, how many investigations do the Commission have to cover the whole country? Investigators...
Chair, can we ask Ms. Thurmans to say whose question it is?
It must Ms. Matuvula. They were saying she had asked 4 questions. I only read one initially.
Okay.
Okay. And then, Chair... Okay. How many, the question is, how many investigators do the Commission have to cover the whole country if the Commission have a plan to put offices for provinces and districts? That's the questions of Ms. Matuvula. Then there's a question from Mr. Moyumang. Is there any intervention envisaged to anticipate dominance in the airline industry following the possible collapse of SA Express and SAA to avoid dominance and price as Comair is also facing a challenge? That was from Mr. Moyamang.
Okay.
And then I think that's all the questions that is written on the chat, Chair. I think everybody has... I'm just double-checking.
May I just ask something? Because my question won't go through. It's failed to send.
Okay.
Ms. Bossoff, right. Then, Ms. Chair. Ms. Bossoff, okay. Can ask.
Let's actually then take Honourable Bossoff.
Thank you very much, Chair. You say that block exemptions have assisted businesses greatly. In view of this, would you say businesses can look forward to these same 19 or not? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions?
No, Chair.
Let me just say, I know there's Honourable Tebekulu Inkosi. I'm not sure if ever he wants to ask a question, but I think those were all the members that I were able to note. And if there are no more questions, I'm sure we can go back to the Commissioner and the team respond or comment on the questions that have been asked. Commissioner and the team, can I ask you to respond or take the comments? Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. We will have, I'll have my colleagues taking the questions they can take, and then I will switch. But perhaps just very quickly, on the question from the Honourable Carpet, we don't project inflation. We follow the Reserve Bank as well. I take the point from the Honourable Yaku about our presence in social media. Unfortunately, I could not pick up her last part of the question, but I'm hoping that my colleagues will manage to pick that up. So if I may ask, then I'll first ask the Deputy Commissioner to be followed by the chief economist. There were specific questions, and then Bakia Majenge will ask the question, will answer the questions also about investigations, as well as Kanye on the turnaround times and response to complainants. If I may, with your permission, Chair, then allow colleagues to come in.
Thank you. I'm sure they can then proceed. The Commission, National Commission.
Thank you, Chair. And honorable members, my name is Adin Rajesus, Deputy Commissioner. Of course, the Commissioner was breaking a bit. I'll take, you know, some of the questions. And I think we note that, you know, maybe our social media presence is not, you know, probably needs to be beefed up. We will do so. There's a question on the veil of penalties, whether they relate to the profit end. How we calculate these penalties as a baseline for settlements is to look at the overcharge that a particular company earned during that period. And all penalties that we have imposed were linked to that and have fully recovered the overcharge. And in addition to that, we added a penalty component to it. You will note that most of the conduct that we are tackling occurred probably for quite a short period of time. So the value of the penalty is linked to the total revenues earned during that period. We have noted concerns and complaints about price increases on staple foods. And I've noted, you know, specific comments about Giani, Vuani, and Malamulele. And these relate also to the complaints that were raised by Honorable Matebula. We are attending to these complaints, and we, of course, have found some difficulties, as the Commissioner has said, in some cases, the input prices are increasing, but in some cases we have to establish the facts, you know, related to each of these cases. And with the COVID restrictions, it also takes a little while to gather evidence for our investigators. On the main hardware case, and we have been developing and further refining the mechanism for, in fact, atonement and damages for these firms. And the main hardware case was one of the initial cases we dealt with. We have resolved, and as the Commissioner has said, that maybe for consistency, we would look at either you know, donations, broad donations to NGOs or the affected people, or donations to the Solidarity Fund, in addition to those matters where possibly we would be levying a penalty. So this is something that we are continuously refining and developing to ensure that the cases we table before the Competition Tribunal apply a consistent methodology. From Honorable McPherson, there isn't much of a, is it, I think if, and there's also a question about, are we duplicating, you know, cases? We indeed have a joint operations team, which we streamlined these investigations with the National Consumer Commission as a competition commission. What you would find is that we could and we do investigate sometimes same companies for different products and sometimes for same products, because the standards that we use, you know, in the Competition Act and or the Consumer Protection Act in some cases are slightly different. And particularly the Competition Act imposes quite strict requirements as opposed to the Consumer Protection Act. So we do have those cases where we would use both instruments to tackle a conduct. And with DISCAM, this is one case where we found that both the Competition Act and the Consumer Protection Act should be fully applied to address this pricing issue, particularly with respect to masks. I will also be taking guidance from my colleagues, because we were not able to divide these questions very well, Chair. But Commissioner, I'm still in your hands. If you think I should be taking, you know, a couple more.
Thank you. Maybe we get the Chief Economist. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. I'll pick up a number of the questions, and we can see what's left at the end of it. As the Commissioner indicated, we don't actually follow or predict or forecast the inflation rate, but we are monitoring price inflation in the food commodities, as the Commissioner indicated. And we're also keeping a track on other items, essential items, in order to see how they're moving. I think as the crisis and the lockdown evolves, we're seeing changes in the pricing. So as the Commissioner indicated, with food prices, we obviously saw a spike initially with panic buying, but that has given way to a drop in demand and, in fact, price reductions. So in terms of the question from Member Yako, in terms of other industries opening up and accessories and price increases, we will certainly monitor this. Our focus has been on essential items as per the initial regulations, as that has the broadest impact. But we are also seeing, as more of the economy opens up and online may be opening up now, that in fact there may be pressure on the ability to price gouge for some of these items. Certainly our observations are that many of the clothing industry is engaged in sales at the moment, and that's why we're actually seeing price decreases. So this may naturally evolve and sort itself out as more shops come online. With consumers constrained, we may be seeing more price declines in future than price increases. In terms of the question from Member Matevule about maize meal prices in rural areas, certainly we get complaints around outside of the major metro areas, which we do follow up on. As the Commissioner indicated, we saw a rise in the maize price going into May, April, May, because of really storage and existing stock shortages. But the bumper crop is coming in at the end of this month, so we're seeing price come down quite dramatically. What we have observed in some of the fresh produce markets is that smaller rural localized markets haven't always functioned well, and we've seen larger price increases. It's something we have noted, and we are scoping for a potential market inquiry into some of the food value chains. So what COVID has done for us is in fact provide a lot of information about how well some of these markets are working or not working, and that provides a basis for later enforcement action. In terms of I think the question from, let me jump down to rather enforcement on price gouging to the general questions from McPherson around extending to the beyond the few tenants to a larger group of tenants. What we have seen with the property retail is that even the exemptions have been difficult to provide a basis for a negotiated agreement. There are still big differences between tenants and property owners as to what is the fair division of pain at this stage and the rental that should accrue. So we have provided input already to DTIC on a further extension to other areas of retail where especially we see smaller firms which may benefit from collective action in negotiations with property retailers. But part of the deal with property retailers in the exemption was that they make a special provision for small business, which covers beyond the three retail sectors that were identified in those regulations. So our engagements with SAPOA, who represent the industry, have demonstrated that they do have, I suppose, codes of practice for all the property owners in order to treat small business. And it's really divided up by whether they were essential traders and therefore operated through lockdown, level five, or whether they're non-essential and may not have been selling. So in terms of the relief, it does already extend well beyond the three sectors identified in terms of small business. Some of the larger businesses were not identified in the initial regulations on the basis that they were large enough to negotiate collectively in any event and didn't need negotiating power as a collective. And in terms of the DIS-CEM accusations that we're using them as a scapegoat, certainly that's not the case. You know, we have an obligation to enforce the Act. And all the major retailers, including DIS-CEM, as the Commissioner indicated, were engaged, in fact, prior to the regulations coming into effect. And as part of that advocacy effort, the Commission continued to engage with these retailers to highlight the risks to them, and including where store managers at individual stores may have been opportunistic. So much of that engagement happened up front with the idea of averting price increases through the major chains if they could control prices that could, in fact, control prices through a vast part of the economy. It's unfortunate that DIS-CEM didn't heed those warnings and continued to increase prices, and that led to the prosecution. In terms of the question, there are two questions around really a post-COVID concentration. So there are questions from Member Mulder about merger to monopolies and assessing those. There was also a question from Member Moimang around SAA and Comair in difficulties and the challenges there. We are certainly reviewing our merger control procedures and also the assessment of distressed mergers in order to come up with a better means of managing these during the COVID time. So with airlines in particular, we are aware that this period may devastate them and may leave us with few airlines ultimately. However, you know, what is also apparent with airlines, and this is the communication already from Comair and SAA, is that one can easily emerge from a liquidation and relaunch the same airline again. And part of this is management of debt and shareholder pain. So certainly with airlines, we will be following this closely. We have a team working on it. But probably the biggest challenge is how to ensure that re-entry can occur and that there are no barriers to that. So as the airline industry is opened up again, more capacity can be put on stream, and many of those planes that were leased and the sitting idle can then be introduced to keep prices down and to keep competition. In terms of actual merger analysis, we have had engagements also with business rescue practitioners because we're not looking at the typical firm failure. We're looking at an event which is potentially short-lived and which then transitions to normal trading conditions. So many companies have short-term debt issues, but their fundamental business is still sound. And this would be many of the companies that were closed during lockdown level five but are now emerging to trade as well. In those cases, it's more around debt relief, and business rescue can be an alternative to mergers and provide the basis for still retaining a deconcentrated economy. I think our biggest concern at the moment is small businesses and their health, because that could set back years of favorable sort of development. And a lot of the approach of the amendments has been to develop small business and historically disadvantaged firms in this economy. So our biggest concern is that component. In terms of the question from Member Mantashe about wheat prices, we import about 50% of wheat, and at the moment stocks are depleted, so we're only importing. We have been, as part of our monitoring of food price inflation, looking at mechanisms to try and relieve some of these price increases. So on wheat in particular, we've engaged DTIC around the import tariff and whether that can be adjusted in order to provide scope for a reduction. It is a careful balancing act, as one also needs to ensure there's enough incentive for the new crop to be planted, and that starts, I think, next month. So there is a transition, but really rand appreciation is one of the factors, as well as export bans in some other countries in order to preserve their own food security. But we are certainly engaged in a broader effort within DTIC in order to manage food price inflation. In terms of the enforcement action against ShopRite as well as the data networks, we are the ones that monitor that. There are monitoring provisions in those consent agreements, and certainly with I think the rise of social media and a lot of consumer activism during this COVID time, we also received considerable complaints where we are able to follow up with that. It is important, though, that these are well publicized so that small firms, at least in terms of the shopping center and exclusive leases, that they understand what has been agreed and can enforce those rights as they negotiate with landlords. The same would be on buyer power, which we released yesterday. It's important those messages get out there so that small business can enforce those rights. In terms of the last question from Member Boshoff about block exemptions, most of these are temporary in order to coordinate around the crisis and debt relief. So they would phase out as the crisis ends. And you'll see from most of those regulations that they endure as long as the state of disaster endures. However, I would point out that we have been working on Section 4 regulations, which look at cooperation arrangements which are pro-competitive, such as around innovation or entering new markets. So that may provide scope very much for small business and an umbrella for cooperative behavior that isn't anti-competitive. However, we are wary that the block exemptions could create a culture of cooperation that may need to maybe to curtail activity later. So it is something we are watching quite carefully. Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, if you want me to answer any others, please let me know.
Thank you, Chief Economist. I now want to specifically talk about the issues around the turnaround time. Colleagues, if you can be short and address things very specifically. So Kanye and Bakke, these are, Chair, the colleagues that are responsible for investigations as well as prosecutions before the tribunal. There were pointed questions about, you know, turnaround times, pointed questions about how long do we take to get back to respondents and so on.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. So I will respond to those questions around how we handle complaints, engage complainants, turnaround times, and how people can lay complaints. There are several ways in which citizens can lay complaints during this period. You know, the first few are the standard measures which we've been using as a commission outside of COVID, which is that people can either email or complete a complaint form, and which is available on our website, and submit that to us. But during this period, we have also established a hotline which we have publicized through the media, where the public are able to send SMSs directly to us, which we are then able to follow up on. We found this to be highly effective, and in fact, the bulk of our complaints have been coming through this channel. I think this was particularly important given the constrained conditions that people are in, and the fact that the members of the public are not able to come to our offices physically to lay complaints as they might have been able to outside of COVID. So once complaints are received, they are captured by our registry team. A case number is allocated. So even if it is coming from an SMS, and an acknowledgement of receipt is sent to the complainant. Thereafter, the complaint is then allocated to an investigator who would then be the one who contacts the complainant. They phone them to get more information about the complaint, location, the products, and so on. So these two steps typically take 3 to 5 days based on our standard or targeted turnaround times. I note the issue with Honorable Matebula, where there was delay in reverting to her with her complaint. I think it was lodged on the 4th of May. This is regarding the price of maize in Mopani, and the investigators took 8 working days instead of the standard 3 to 5 that I've just referenced. So it is really unfortunate. There were IT system glitches between the 4th and 6th of May to explain that particular incident, which delayed things. But we we have been working to meet those timelines in most of the complaints we receive. When the complainant has been contacted, a full investigation will then ensue. Of which the first step is to contact the respondent, in other words, the party against which the allegation is being made. So there too, for COVID-19, we have set protocols that respondents must revert to us with written accounts or written explanation of their conduct within 48 hours. We found this to be very effective in moving the cases speedily, because investigators are then able to make a determination based on the response that they received from the respondent about whether to proceed further with the case if there is substance, or perhaps to close it off if we find that there is perhaps an explanation that is justifiable or it does not speak to price gouging. So out of the 1,354 cases or complaints that have been received, which the commissioner indicated earlier, we have 697 of those being relevant to COVID. In other words, that were investigated or are due for further investigation. And of those, 301 have been completed. That puts it at about 43% of complaints, relevant complaints, received in the last 2 months have been completed by the team with various conclusions. So whether that be non-referral or referral to the tribunal or consent agreement. There was also a question on the number of investigators who are involved in these cases and whether they can reach across all the provinces. So as honorable members would know, we are located in Pretoria with only one office, but our work spans the entire country. There are 25 staff members there are 75 staff members who are involved in the price gouging team. 47 of those are investigators, 10 are specialist litigators, 14 are specialist economists, and 4 are involved in the registry administration. So that makes that total pool of 75 who handle the cases end-to-end from the receipt of the complaint all the way up to lodging the cases and prosecuting them at the tribunal. If I may, Commissioner, there were also some questions raised around awareness, and I think the Deputy Commissioner touched on some of some of the activities or actions we're taking in that regard. So, and there was also a question about whether our awareness has reached all nine provinces. So, and also there were questions around schools and communities. So I would say here, Commissioner, that and Chairperson and Honourable Members, that there is certainly room to reach consumers with our advocacy work and the general public as well. I think much of our focus in the past 2 months has been with retailers and suppliers. It's really just about stopping the water from coming into the house. But I think we now are at a point where we would be doing targeted awareness programs to reach consumers, to explain price gouging, to explain how to complain beyond just the media engagements that we've been having. And we would want to even get the Honourable Members' support and assistance in reaching those communities. So this is certainly an area I think we can do more in. I trust I answered everything, Commissioner, but I'm also in your hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know, but if you still want to come, I'm also conscious of the time. I don't want the chair to start complaining.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just one question. Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. The question related to the 20% gross margin cap that the Commission imposes as a remedy in the settlement agreements. The basis, Chair, for the 20% gross margin cap, it actually fetches its origin from the pre-COVID-19 gross margin. So we observed that before the onset of the pandemic and the declaration of the national disaster, generally these were the gross margins for this essential product. So essentially what has happened is that post COVID-19 as well as the declaration of the disaster, there was a very sharp or significant escalation of that margin. So that is really a benchmark that we have based on what prevailed in the market before COVID-19, hence the 20% benchmark. Thank you, Commissioner and Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I must apologize in advance if we have missed any of the questions, but I think my colleagues were quite comprehensive. Just on this last question, Bakhe was answering, the short answer to the question about whether this was a cap or a percentage reduction is that it is a cap, as Bakhe has explained. Also, just to emphasize that the point probably that could be easily misunderstood. When we say we want to avoid duplication between the National Consumer Commission and the Competition Commission, we are not suggesting that there will never be investigations that may be pursued against the same company by the two agencies if there are in fact sufficient grounds to do so. Because both of these institutions do have a statutory mandate to discharge, but we do this in a cooperative and responsible manner. The other thing, just on organizational issues, I think there were many questions about, how we are working. We have had to kind of shift people from existing program to focus on COVID-19. So the 75 that Kanye was mentioning is not people who are ready, who were ready, standing, waiting for COVID-19 cases. Our screening unit is only about 5 people or so. But with this, we've had to ramp that up by asking people from other divisions to stop what they were doing and focus on turning around these cases quite quickly. There are big picture issues. I know we might not exhaust, Chair, because there are really debates rather than questions. So for an example, some of the questions from Honorable McPherson about what happens post-COVID in terms of airlines and other sectors of the economy. It's going to be interesting to watch. My own view is that we have both a market problem, in other words, conditions in the market now that may lead to higher prices, but we also have a structure problem where you are going to have concentration, and concentration usually results in higher prices. So that's something also that I think the Competition Commission has to watch very, very closely. Similarly, Honorable Mulder raised the question, what happens to measures that are in a way forced by the COVID-19 constraints? You know, that's a very, very difficult question. We are discussing it and now. What happens to jobs? So balancing between allowing a certain level of concentration just to maintain those jobs is going to be tough calls. I don't think there are ready-made answers. I think we can only appreciate the views expressed by honorable members, and we can also promise to act in the best interest of South Africa. Sometimes it is the case that we have to relax competition rules because there are other public interests that are important. But we also should never lose sight of the benefits of competition, especially to consumers in terms of prices, to small businesses in terms of their access into markets and so on. So in the end, it's a balancing act. And just to say, these questions about efficiency and turnarounds and things like that asked by honorable members, these are questions that as commissioners we ask all the time. On average, we take about 3 years to complete an excessive price investigation. We've asked our people to complete these investigations in a week. You know, everybody has had to change completely. This, in fact, is shocking companies, because when we give them 48 hours to respond to excessive pricing charges, that's a huge ask. So the turnaround is not only constraints from the commission, it's also complaints from the respondents who are hugely complaining. In fact, I'm expecting that some of them may even appeal some of the tribunal decisions just on the basis of the amount of time they have had to respond to some of these. So I'm saying that the balancing is not an exact science. But overall, I think in conclusion, Chair, we should be happy that the inflation in South Africa is low. And I think that without claiming all the credit for that, I think the early interventions by competition authorities, consumer protection authorities, we have been able to send a message. And I think that overall that message has been sent. And I'm not saying the situation is perfect, but the numbers coming from the state essay on the inflation are a testimony to this and are encouraging. Lastly, I think just to emphasize that we do know that prices do go up sometimes, and I think Honorable Mantashe raised this point that when they go up, what do we do? Do we say this is just an input cost, maybe an imported inflation? No. We dig deep, we get into the detail, we understand what was the percentage of that input cost increase, and what is the percentage of the actual price, and what are the margins, and what has been the change in the margins end over that period of time. So we have technical teams that are working with our prosecuting teams to make sure that when we decide to bring a case, it is a solid case, but also that people don't pull a wool over our eyes. So thank you very much, Chair. In advance, as I said, apologies if I've missed anything.
Let's actually agree that we have received the engagement with the Competition Commission. Commissioner, I think with the team, would like to thank you for the time.
Chair?
There must be a possibility. Honourable members, if you can just hold on a bit, possibility okay. that we may have to follow through with through the chat, if possible, for other outstanding questions or issues that might have been raised, so that at least we have them sent to yourself, Commissioner, and your team, and then we actually can try and get them in written response. It's just the time factor, and one would actually would have liked to have more engagement of the committee and the commission, but I think at this stage we should be able, just on the time on our agenda, to be able to actually thank you for the effort and the time and the engagement that we've had. It has actually opened up a sense of us understanding the kinds of challenges you are facing. So can we proceed then, and thank you, Commissioner and the team, and actually take our next presentation of the National Consumer Commission. We will actually then be asking the Acting Commissioner, Tezi Mabuza, and the team to actually engage with us. And I would ask our honorable members just to allow that we proceed and take the next presentation, because I know if ever someone comments and someone actually asks a question, we may need more time than what we have. May I apologize and ask that we take the next presentation, honorable members? I'm sure we can be able to do that. Honorable members, can you agree then, take the next presentation? Commissioner, thanks very much.
Chair.
Yes. Can we pick up the next presentation, honorable members? And thank you, Babu Bonake.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we actually invite Mama Mabuza? Acting Commissioner Tezi Mabuza will be then speaking to us with the team, taking us through the presentation. Can we take the same approach to actually ask members to look at their backup gadgets, and then maybe ask that we get the presentation projected in terms of the National Consumer Commission presentation? Commissioner? Acting Commissioner, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity, and good morning to members of both committees. Chairperson, our presentation is the answers in response to our COVID, government's response to COVID. This is our presentation, and then I will be supported. My name is Tezi Mabuza. I'm the Acting Commissioner. I'll be supported by Ms. Milwa, who is the Divisional Head in Enforcement and Investigation, and also by Mr. Jablani Mbeche, who is our Divisional Head in Legal Services. And then our Systems Administrator will be there to assist us in case if there is a glitch. The outline of our presentation, we are going to look at the introduction, and then we are going to look at calls and complaints received, looking at the demographics in terms of complaints for provinces, and then we are going to look at the trends from March to May up to so far, and then we are going to look at the assessment of complaints and the process of approving investigations, and then also take you through the completed investigations, matters closed and those that have not been referred, and then also matters that are either referred to the tribunal or those that are in the process of settlement. And then we'll also take you through the financial implications and benefits, challenges, and conclusions. Chair, the NCC, our mandate actually is to promote fair, accessible, and sustainable marketplaces for consumer products and services. In doing that, one of our roles is to advise our minister when there is either a policy issue that's related to our mandate. Now, when we started looking at now the response of the state of disaster and what might be happening, taking cue from what had happened when we were looking at the space during the disaster in Katrina. We were aware that there might be an abrupt spike in prices, which is price gouging, and then this was likely to happen, wherein we find that based on the rules of demand and supply, wherein prices would unfairly rise, and then that would impact negatively on our consumers. What we did then, it was to engage and advise the DTI. So in that, in looking at the panic buying as well, we realized that from the beginning of March, consumers now were panic buying. You would go to stores, bigger retail stores, you go into shelves, and you'll realize that essential goods, or even goods like your toilet paper, your maize meal, canned food and all that were starting to dry out from the shelves. So that would mean that consumers by themselves also created some kind of like artificial scarcity. This was also some of the guidelines that we had to give that actually led to government now having a duty to protect consumers against this unfair, unquestionable, and unreasonable prices, and also, again, also the conduct of the consumers themselves. Because when they created scarcity, it would mean that then that need would also increase. Minister promulgated the regulation, which actually for us as a commission, we saw that as an immediate positive impact in dealing with actually the now the price increases by themselves just from the beginning, because now the presentation of that and now the media coverage on that now led suppliers to understand that in essence there is a regulation that will govern that if the prices are unjustified and unfair. And then what we saw is that to date is that only the number of businesses have seemed not to be compliant. And then we saw that even for big retailers, most of our big retailers, they are complying. Not that we are saying that just out of that is also seen in terms of the number of investigations that we have completed. Now, in answering to calls and complaints that we received, we had established a toll-free number. This was to give a face and interact with consumers. And we know that our ad talk particularly to show that there is a need to really interact and let consumers speak to warm bodies. So our strategy was to manage the contact center in such a way that there is human interface. We had at a given point six people, but then now when we started with our toll-free number, our queuing was at four, and we realized that in the beginning we lost a number of consumers. Because our average number of consumers on a average time taken by consumers in a line is around your 5 to 10 minutes. But we realized that during COVID, normally consumers would like to be on the line for like about 15 and most cases about 30 and 35 minutes. So that would mean that the queuing time was also affected, which forced us now to increase our line to have a queuing of about 16 people so that we shouldn't lose a number of calls. But also assisted with that, we also set up a Twitter account just to look at COVID-19 only. In this case, it was to ensure that consumers could now raise some of the complaints on Twitter, and then we'll box them to direct them on how to go about also to file a complaint. And then on the 28th of March to the Fed, we ran a public awareness campaign through all 11 national stations to alert consumers, to direct them to our toll-free number, and also to sensitize them about the issue of regulations. We spoke to the consumers because we saw that besides the small businesses that are classified as consumers by themselves, but we thought that there is a need really to speak to consumers because the regulations also spoke to the mechanisms that will be set up by suppliers wherein they can limit the number of stores. And then we knew that for some consumers, that would be something that was unheard of, because when they get into the store, they could buy as much as they wanted. So we wanted to sensitize them around the arrangements that will be done by suppliers in making sure that they adhere to issues of distancing, also the limit in numbers, and also on the limit in number of people that will be in the store at a given time, and also the limit on the number of units. And up to so far, up to the 12th of May, we had received 2,900 calls. Of those calls or complaints that we had received, we had answered 87%, as we said, that we lost some in the beginning. We have lost 12% of those complaints. And of the 2,533 complaints received to date, or up to the 12th of May, 1,618 were related to alleged price gouging, while the remaining 915 were not related to the regulations. But to those, we were looking at consumers that were complaining about social services, your UIF, your food parcels, your data, your electricity coupons. And what we did with those complaints was now to refer consumers to the relevant platforms wherein they could complain. Now, when we were looking at the demographics in relation to the number of complaints, yes, also this is also now in relation to what ComCom had reported as well. We saw the highest number in Gauteng, in KZN, the Western Cape, and then fairly Eastern Cape and Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And then we saw the list in the Northern Cape. And what we can also see in terms of the trends of the complaints that we had received from May, from March and to May, what we saw is that in March, the bulk, though, was food and hygiene, but it was at 53%. And then we saw 43% in March. And then now when you look in April, looking at April, is that now the shift was more 73% now that was made up of food and hygiene. And then in May, that increased to like 80.1%. And now when we are looking at the trends in March, we'd see that now the split, which is 56.7% was on your personal protection, which is your gloves, your hand sanitizers, and the face mask. And then that shifted in May, in April, where in now, it was now moving to your sustenance, which is your food and hygiene during the lockdown. And then we see that continuing in May. But as you can see that starting from this week, which is not really projected, is that now we are now starting to also see a spike going back now to your protective clothing that will be hand sanitizers and face masks. That would mean that our projection in May might also now start shifting from the 80% to something totally different because now of the increase in protective clothing again that's coming up. Now, when we are assessing complaints and approving investigations, our aid now as a competition, as the NCC, is that before we even start engaging with a supplier, we have to alert them that we have approved an investigation. So what we do is when we receive complaints through our toll-free number, is that we recorded those complaints, and then we looked at the supplier, the province, the town, and the details. This was also to assist us to check in terms of now the suppliers that consumers were complaining mostly about, because our act is there to ensure that when we commission an investigation, it was to look at the highest impact so that now what the outcome of the investigation will impact on a larger number of consumers. So what we also did is we looked at the data that was aggregated in terms of now the survey, and we also had support from Nestle field workers, where in now Nestle had volunteer to say that they have field workers, that when they go and pack their stuff, their products, then they can also assist us in scanning real prices on the shelves, so that we can know that in the list of prices that we had given them, that were part of the essential goods, like we would be looking at your maize meal, we'll be looking at milk, and then like maybe pasteurized milk in a particular brand and all that. So they will collate those statistics for us every week. So we will compare those complaints against those real prices that we would have received of particular commodities. And then what we'll do is, where in now we found that number of consumers complain about a particular retailer or a particular commodity, then we will prioritize those complaints. So when we were looking at complaints, we would also look at those, when we were looking, let's say, at a pack of six liter pack of pasteurized milk, then we would be saying, what is the brand? What is the cost? So when we would see that now the cost in the shelves was like, let's say, 74 rand on average, and then we would see that somebody was selling that, let's say, for 94 rand, this for us rang a bell to say that there is maybe something onto this that gives us reasonable suspicion, then to now say this is a matter that we would like to investigate. And up to so far, we have approved 127 investigations, wherein we have approved investigations and issued investigation certificates. For those that we have now approved of the 127, we have up to so far completed, as of the 12th of May, we have completed 29 investigations. As you would see, I would give those investigations that you would see now in the first slide. But what was also interesting, that was also a question raised, is that when we were looking at the investigations that we would now be looking at, some of the investigations, yes, they were similar to those that were done by the Competition Commission. When we compared the notes, we would find that it's the same supplier that we were looking at, and then you would find that now the commodity itself or the brand, let's say, of the mask is different from what the Competition Commission was looking at. And sometimes now, in some of those commodities, if they are many, you would find that now, if the Competition Commission had now finalized their investigation, it was of those that were remaining in our investigations were not really, we would find that it's wherein now the supplier was not in contravention, then we will close those. But wherein now we found that now, especially like the question in this term, you would find that now when we were looking at the commodity or the, I would say, the mask, and the definition of the mask in terms of now, even the numbers and all that, that they were different, we will continue with that investigation. Now, in terms of the investigations that we had closed, these are the 11 investigations of the 25 that we had closed, and then it's only up to the 12th of May, as we had said. And we had closed this because now we find that when we were looking at the investigations from the Consumer Commission's Consumer Commission, in terms of our act, we looked at the price markup. What we did is we would look at the price from December, January, February, and March. If the price markup of that commodity, let's say the pick and pay the hand sanitizer for that particular brand, if their markup was from December, let's say 40%, and throughout, even if the price would have increased, but their markup still remained within the 40%, then for us that was not a contravention. So that was the manner in which we looked at our investigations for us to reach the conclusion that there was no contravention. It was not on any other any other profiteering or whatever. It was just directly on the price markup as given on their price margin. Now, on the matters that we had referred to the tribunal, what we have done is that we had 8 matters. One of them is links that we had referred. The matter was filed on the 9th and heard on the 30th. Judgment on this matter was in favor of links as the supplier, and the reason being that the supplier in this instance had refunded. They did not receive the stock, and then when we did the investigation, they had already refunded, because it was pre-orders, refunded some of the refunded to the consumers that they had charged the increased prices on, because they did not sell the stock. But the one area that we looked at that wherein we fell short as the commission is that we did not bring in the other element, though we argued it in our founding papers, but we did not pray for it in a contravention in our founding documents. So it was not considered. So the matter, actually, the supplier was left to go scot-free. So it was in favor of the supplier. The national overalls, as we are saying, is that the papers were settled. We were waiting for a consent from them now to agree to us to serve them through the email. The Mopani pharmacy, I know that it was a question that was raised also in the question to the Competition Commission, is that here now this we are awaiting for the confirmation of the settlement agreement from the tribunal. Here we were looking at an admin fine that was, this admin fine is based on their the profit that they had made. And then as we are saying that from our side, as from the CPA, we were looking at the markup. The markup that they had here was beyond the markup that they had started with of 50% of their mask from December up to March, wherein we saw the increase now going to 113%, I think, on this matter. So now when we agreed with them now is that in the settlement agreement is that there will be this administrative fine of the commission that they had made of this 52,796, which is an administrative fine of the commission that they had made. And then they were going to donate the 2,500 reusable masks to non-profit organizations caring for the people that are vulnerable. And then we agreed that moving forward, they will stick to their markup of not more than 50%. That is the agreement with them. And with KitKat on this, we asked them for their permission again to serve them through email. They took some time as well. We ended up filing the matter at the tribunal on the 11th. But as we speak of now, is that now they wanted to come on board to settle the matter. So we are looking at a settlement, but this is an area now because they took some time wherein now we are also going to now look into their their profit margin, and also looking at their turnover as a business because of the manner in which they had acted, because they really took some time in coming to the table until we started filing the matter. The other matters that we are looking at, it was Belegi. This you would see that it seems to be similar to the one that a competition commission was looking at, but it is a similar company with 2 branches. This is a different branch, which is Belegi. Already now, I think, filed as of yesterday, but then they are now starting to negotiate. So we are looking at now filed. We are now looking at the settlement proposal with them because we realize that the more we give them time to really consider, if we haven't filed, they tend to take more time. Now, the question that was also raised was on the Dis-Chem matter. Yes, we were looking at the markup of Dis-Chem. And then for us now to look at our papers while the Competition Commission had filed their matter, we now looked at the matters that the Competition Commission, the goods, the type of the face mask that the Competition Commission was dealing with and the sanitizers. Now we were looking at a different one. Hence now we have removed the one that the Competition Commission is dealing with, and we are dealing with a different brand altogether. And just to also say that when we are looking at bigger retailers like your Dis-Chem, we realize that when consumers are complaining, they will complain about a different store, which is Dis-Chem, at a particular town, and then with a different commodity. And for us, consumers will file or will complain about a particular branch of Dis-Chem with a different commodity. Hence now, in the public, it seems as if we are all pursuing the same company, which of course from them they said to us we should serve them at head office for all their branches. While now, for us, it's different branches and different commodities. Hence, now, it's not actually, it looks like Dis-Chem as head office, but it's different commodities and different branches. For People's Pharmacy, we have already settled the papers. We have also now are waiting for them to give consent, which I think we had received yesterday, and to serve them, and I think based on that, then we will move forward. And not safety products as well, is that we were waiting for them to also agree for us to serve them through email, and then for us now to continue. This, I know that maybe the question that might arise is that why would we be asking for them to ask for permission. This is actually based on our act and also the rules of our tribunal. Now, looking at the financial implications and the benefit, is that in setting up, in terms of the financial implications, we set up the toll-free number, the line, at a cost of, up to now, it's a cost of 65,000, and we set a budget aside, which we had allocated to Artemis, which we have not yet disbursed any of the funds. The reason for us to do that was because we have a team of only four prosecutors. So we wanted all our prosecutors now to use a different strategy, all of them to take up a case, to draft the founding papers. And once the external attorneys were there, it was to help us to bounce some of our founding papers with, so that now we can get a different view from somebody external. And then the cost so far that we are looking at that will be expended in relation to now our the toll-free number and the budget that we have set aside for attorneys. It is plus minus 4.6% of our goods and services budget that we had already set aside. Now, the benefits that we had derived from this process is the immediate response by the minister in relation to the promulgation of the regulation itself, because that promulgation and also the media coverage around that a certain number of consumers, the excessive pricing, because what we have picked up is that even if some of the prices increased during that period, the coming up of the promulgation of suppliers now to go back in terms of the markups that they had increased either during the time of the state of disaster, around your 13, 14, or maybe from the 9th of March to now, February, that was in line with the regulation. And also the provision of the toll-free number and the media campaigns as such, for us that alerted consumers to assist us in monitoring the prices. We know that for consumers to now call and have so many of them calling at the same time, especially during April, it made consumers now to be conscious of looking at the prices of the commodities that were there in the market, though some of us didn't do that initially. And also the setting up of the toll-free services now made consumers realize that at least there is the Competition Commission and the Consumer Commission that is there to support them. And also, even if some of the complaints that we received, a third of those were not related to price hiking, then we assisted those consumers to refer them to platforms that could assist them. Though we cannot actually quantify the actual monetary benefit based on the regulation, but then the fact that when we started with some of the investigations, when we received responses from some of the suppliers, we could see that some of them really went back to now look at their price markups that they had in February, so that assisted. So what was also of importance as well is that most of the consumer, of the suppliers, even some of the smaller ones, independent ones, they were able to respond to the need of government, even if we know that just a smaller percentage of them were not really acting or playing fair. And then that by itself, the regulations and the media campaign and the support by some of the ministers as well in throughout COGTA and all that, in giving up I would say publicizing the numbers, the toll-free number and the COVID Twitter account, assisted for consumers to become vigilant, and also for some small suppliers to become vigilant. But what would also see, it was the coming on board of Nestle to say that we are simply a manufacturer. We have now our own field workers that distribute our stock in the different stores and all that. We can come on board and assist and scan the prices for you. That was a plus for us because we could really have prices handy to compare what are the real prices on the shelves for the different commodities. Now, the challenges that we had picked up is that we really did, in the beginning, had a number of consumers, even in the smaller rural areas, that would now call us through the toll-free number. But then we saw that the numbers began to reduce or to dwindle. This was for us to say that it could be that we are not really servicing them well, because some of the consumers would even go on and call us again and say, hey, I complained about the spa or maybe the spaza shop next to me, but I haven't seen you. You did not come to the spa. You did not even come to my spaza shop. The prices are still the same. Our absence of being there and responding immediately and having a direct impact, that made some of them to really become despondent. And what we see as well is that even we had a webinar with our, through what we call a consumer protection forum, which actually include all other regulators, including your provincial consumer affairs officers that relate to consumer protection during May. We wanted to find out exactly what really went wrong with us in the provinces in making sure that we respond to the need of prices, that it revealed that for some of us or some of the regulators, especially our provincial consumer affairs officers, they perceived that the enforcement of Regulation 350 was the sole responsibility of us at the national office, the NCC and the Competition Commission. So in turn, most of them did not do anything. They closed shop and they worked from home on other work, but not related to the COVID. So what we saw is that there was no consistency, especially wherein we could see the response that we saw in different provinces where in the MECs in economic development would now assist in enforcing the regulations. And what we also saw is that not all consumers, especially in the rural areas and the townships, benefited from our regulated prices. We saw that the informal traders, especially of cover shops, and some of the people that were then emerging, retailers, especially on your Facebook and all that, were in now. There were no receipts that were issued to consumers to even complain or file a complaint. So consumers, even if they would give you a short or maybe a picture of the product that they had sold, there was no receipt that would accompany that to say this is how much it costs. And what we could pick up is that some of the businesses were not registered even on what we had on Facebook and all that. It was not in the ordinary course of business. So even if you would follow up on those retailers immediately when we say, can we engage with you, they would simply close their Facebook account, and then that would mean that we had no one to talk to or to issue an investigation certificate. And then what we had also picked up is that although we had 127 investigations approved with investigation certificates, because now some of them were informal businesses with no directors, we could not have proper citation for either the director, even if it's a CC, or even now if it was on Facebook, for a person to serve the investigation certificate with. And what we had picked up for your pasta shops and all that, they did not have an email address or anything for us to serve them. So, and then also compounded by the issues that we could not even have some of our counterparts to go and serve some of the investigation certificates personally to those pasta shops and so. And then what we also picked up is that some of the suppliers, yes, they had acknowledged receipt through email of our investigation certificate. But then because we had asked them for 48 hours to give us some of the information, they said they could not do that because now they are ceased operating during level 5 of the lockdown. So now those investigations are still open, so they asked for more time. And also what we had picked up for us now is that as the NCC, our act, though it says that now when we file an investigation as a tribunal now in our founding papers, is that if it's based on reasonable suspicion by complaints raised by consumers, then the act still or the rules still speak of signed complaint form, which was very difficult for us to get because now some of the consumers would not have email addresses. They will complain, would fill the complaint form on their behalf, but they could not sign those complaint form. But as well, what we also now was asked of us is that, again, when we filed during the time of agency, we still have to ask the other party to give us permission to serve them online. So if they would now withhold that for a longer period now, we were supposed to again go back and say, check if they have received. They will do. They will not even now click on that email for them to be now served online. So those were some of the obstacles that we had to face in terms of now the complaint form and also the consent from the person that we are serving to allow us to serve them online. In conclusion, Chairperson, what we had seen as well is that, yes, we looked at this and say the regulation was good, it was on point, It now said this is the regulation in relation to either excessive pricing and issues of the markup. But what we had picked up is that there was no meeting of minds in relation to the NCC specifically and the provincial consumer affairs offices, which had concurrency in this manner, in understanding what is required of each regulator during this time, especially in their provinces wherein they were working in assisting us to enforce the regulation. And also what we saw, though we had the national campaigns from our side, especially with the radio stations and all that, we know that some of the consumers in our smaller radio, in our smaller rural areas, they depend mostly on community radio stations. If we would have leveraged on our provincial consumer affairs offices as well to help and run the same messages in the community radios to reach as many consumers as possible, we hope that that would have also assisted. And what we also see is that there should be a concerted effort to ensure that from government side that all suppliers, including our informal suppliers, that they are all subjected to the same enforcement action. Because now money spent at an informal sector or at a spaza shop, it's still similar to money spent at a bigger retail shop. So consumers, even if they spend their money, we said to them, yes, go to your smaller or informal sectors nearer to you to buy. But then if the regulation was not serving them, if they have to complain, then the regulation was not really consistent, because now those people would raise their prices as much as they wanted, and then there would not be a recourse, because if you serve them, they would not get any other service unless you go there and serve them personally. So those were the issues that we had picked up. But then as well, the regulation that we had, we really think that it was on time, it was on point to mitigate against the unfair pricing, but we realized that as much as the rules in the regulation would allow for urgent filing, but we wish that as well that there should be different rules that will operate during this time, that will say, how do we deal with issues of email addresses wherein consumers now will be forced to go out and attest to a complaint that they would have filed, and also on the issues of now asking for consent, that if it is now withheld, how do we deal with that? Because that, again, it became an impediment. As you can see with the case that we had filed on the 9th of April, but it was only heard on the 30th of March. Though really the time now of the agency allowed for 4 days on both parties. But now we felt that the issue of asking for consent most of the time was really for us, wherein it took a little bit of time from our rules to really assist us in being speedy in the manner in which we responded. I will end there, Chairperson, and say thank you and close the sharing. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can we then actually proceed to actually check Secretariat with the questions for clarity or comments?
Mr. Tring, Chair.
Honorable Tring. Honorable Tring, floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the forward thinking of the NCC was to curtail suppliers from increasing their prices on essential goods and also to protect consumers from being denied access to essential goods and services, and I think that that is commendable. But of the 29 investigations completed, these appeared to be legally registered businesses or known companies. Now, by your own admission in the presentation, slide 16 on point 3 states that there was no consistency in the enforcement of the regulation in the different provinces. So we appreciate the admission, but the question is, what has been done or has been done to rectify the inconsistency of enforcement in the different provinces. Then secondly, Chair, second question is, what has been done to get around the problem of serving investigation certificates on suppliers in the informal sector? Surely the law must apply equally in both the formal and the informal sector. I think bearing in mind that also sometimes in the informal sector, we also have the challenge of fronting, and there are some big companies that are operating in the informal sector, and if they are not having the investigation certificates being served on them, they benefit to the detriment of the consumer. Thank you, Chair.
Chair?
The next member? Yes, Andre.
Mr. Mumbuyani?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation. That's quite eye-opening. Chair, maybe the first one will be on the launching of the toll-free. I just wanted to check in terms of the launching of the toll-free. Do they have any sense in terms of people using the toll-free in terms of democracy or in terms of provinces? Because most provinces cannot access even a phone. So I just want to check whether this launching of the toll-free is assisting in the in those provinces that are rural in nature. Also, in terms of the turnaround and the concurrency, I think I'm fine with the 30 days one, but I just wanted to check this normal turnaround time, the 30 days, or is the COVID one? Because here we are a national disaster. Cannot have the same turnaround strategy as it is normal. Chairperson, I just want to check also what measures will the NCC initiate to address the observation regarding the inconsistencies in the enforcement of the provinces in terms of the regulation, and what could be the reason for these inconsistencies in the province? In terms of the CPI, the CPI.
We are near cutting now.
I'm saying in terms of the CPI, Chair.
Yeah,
the consumer price index. That statistics was provided by the Nestle. I just wanted to check in terms of the investigation, the 127 investigation, and also the 29 completed. Because in the margin of somewhere like 90-something is still outstanding. What is the issue there? Also, Chair, in terms of the Mopani, the 250, who is monitoring that Mopani is dealing with it, and who is identifying those NPOs or charity organizations for Mopani to be able to assist with the 250 reusable? And also, I wanted to check whether the admin fee is part of the solidarity fund or the admission fee will go to NCC. Maybe the last one, Chair, in terms of the emails, I'm not so sure whether are we assisting only those three big cities. Because if you're saying you will be sending email to Spaza Shop to receive certificate, our Spaza Shop are situated in rural provinces where there's no network, there's nothing. You can be able to send an email to serve in a Spaza. So I just want to check what other measures do they have to able to reach those Spaza shops that are in rural places, coming with emails and so forth. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the time.
The next one,
Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Hermans.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. And you know, I'm so conscious of the time, because this report is so important for South Africans at large to hear, and especially to hear the responses of the Commission. And we only have about 10 minutes left. But let me just appreciate the recognition of the Commission on the issue of spaza shops, because I think our most vulnerable consumers are those who purchase from informal traders. So going forward, the lesson that we learn from this period of COVID-19 must be that there must be a better way for us to work to increase our footprint, to work through the district model and through municipalities so that we protect the consumers even there in our informal settlements and in our deep rural areas, so that we serve all South Africans. I also just want to check with the Consumer Commission, what else do they consider as part of their mandate besides the issue of pricing? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair, yes. Ms. Mantashe?
Honourable Mantashe?
Chair, thank you very much. But I'm interested to know what would the NCC do in future about the rural areas where they could not assist places like the Northern Cape because of their being rural. And we are worried because those people also deserve to be safe, Chairperson. I'm also worried about the footprint of the commission in our rural provinces. And I would love the CEO to tell us how do they interact with the rural provinces if they have no offices in those provinces. I'm also worried, Chairperson, because in both the presentation, when the Competition Commission and the NCC, they talk about that their focus is on lowering market access for SMEs and ACIs. But when they say so, I have not seen any input from them that talks to individual small businesses in as far as the payment holiday is concerned, because the state of the nation addressed by the president directed all of us to make an effort to ensure that township and rural economy, we prioritize it. And when they let those people fend for themselves under these unscrupulous owners, what are we saying about the pronunciation by the state president? Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, Ms. Mutahum.
Mutahum? Honorable Mutahum? Honorable Mutahum? Okay. Let's pick up the next one.
Mr. Mulder.
Honorable Mulder? Honorable Mulder?
This mic is...
Thank you, Chair. As far as the resolved cases is concerned, 29 of them was investigated. 24 of them is about hand sanitizers and masks. Now, I just want to know how did the Commission pick or choose these specific ones, as food is also essential goods. A specific reason why 24 out of 29 has been prioritized or chosen to be investigated. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Next one.
Yes. Chair, Ms. Dinizulu will read the questions of Ms. Matevula and Mr. Moyomang. Matevula.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question is from Ms. Matevula. Goes as follows: whether the Commission have considered to use local radio stations to inform the public about their toll-free numbers, as many in rural and townships rely on it as access of information. The second one is, what is your department doing to protect the consumer
who don't want their identity to be revealed in terms of tip-offs. And she goes further and requests the NCC to provide the toll-free number. And the next question is from Mr. Moimang. Kindly give details in terms of 15 cases reported in the Northern Cape and where the case is resolved. Thank you.
Okay. Secretariat?
Chair,
are there any further questions?
Ms. Mutawung, we'll try Ms. Mutawung again, Chair.
Mutawung, are you connected?
Oh, and wait.
Mutawung? Okay. Mutawung is actually not connected. Can I just say there is a technical issue raised by Secretariat? The formality of the meeting in terms of scheduled time is that we should actually then be able to adjourn it around 12. We just 5 minutes to 12. Can I then just ask that we will actually be then asking the our National Consumer Commission on the questions that are asked to be able to actually speak back, but I know we'll go beyond 12. I'm not sure if ever the adjournment part we can do now and then further discussion beyond that, Secretariat.
Chair, if I may, at 12 o'clock, we need to indicate that the meeting adjourns so that the broadcasting can stop. But as a committee, we can still continue on the platform and engage with the commissioner. But the broadcasting will just stop. But for them to know that the broadcasting must stop, so you need to indicate that the meeting is adjourned at 12. So then they know they need to stop the broadcasting, but we can continue, Chair.
Okay. Can I then actually just ask members just to say that we will give that indication. It's for the recording part, obviously, of the process and the formalities in terms of the allocated time. So maybe I would actually ask that the National Consumer Commission speak to in response to the questions that were asked by members. We will actually just pause for a minute at 12 so that we actually comply with the process. Secretariat?
Chair, I just received a question from Ms. Mutawung. Can I read it?
Yeah.
Chair?
Yes, please.
Ms. Mutawung is asking, what lessons have been learned by the NCC during the lockdown, and what measures will the NCC implement going forward against price hikes?
Okay. Cuthbert, is that you wanted to?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of consistency, when we ran out of time last week, we were told that we must submit written questions, and we did receive those responses, which we are very grateful for. However, when we have a meeting with the minister in future, surely we should apply the same rules and he should be answering our questions after the time limit. I think just as a matter of consistency, we can't have one rule for one particular meeting and then another set of rules. I think that we need to have it standardized across the board to ensure fairness.
Okay. So are you proposing, Honorable Cuthbert, that we then agree to actually stop our meeting at 12? And be able to actually ask the questions that were asked to be responded to in writing. If ever that's the approach, then I think that's what I would suggest to the meeting. Then we actually will pick it up in that way.
Chairperson?
Is that an understanding?
Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Mbuyane,
yes. Yes, Mbuyane?
Yes.
Chair, my hand is also up.
Okay.
Can I respond to you?
Mbuyane?
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to check, Chair, whether we can be able to at least get those questions as on a written response kind of arrangement. Yes. Because we thought our meeting will be ending at 12 o'clock so that we deal with other issues. Given the fact that we are working at the constituency, we're still having other issues to deal with. Thank you very much.
Herman?
Okay, let me support Honorable Mbuyane.
Okay. Can I just then say...
Mr. Cuthbert?
Come again?
Mr. Cuthbert.
Cuthbert?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, rather than making a proposal, I'm just indicating the possibility of a precedent being set, because next time the Minister comes around and we are asking questions and he says he's running out of time, then we can't use the same excuse. So that's purely what I'm pointing out.
Okay. But for today's meeting, I'm sure you actually agree that we proceed and conclude and actually accept the written responses to the question asked by members. Can I then say, because that actually concludes our meeting, and then obviously our next meeting will be on Friday, and I'm sure we will be able to actually meet. The meeting is going to be at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we will actually then pick up from there. And for today's meeting, maybe we can conclude, and the House is adjourned. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. We can conclude our meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to everyone. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
No, it's fine. No, we're done. Mm.